United Nations, when it was sold to the American people back in 1945, we were told basically that there was no intention on the part of any of the leadership in the world to make the United Nations into a world government. Well, that's not true. The following year, Assistant Secretary William Benton made a speech before UNESCO that was the first year of a UNESCO, in which he said, and I quote, "As long as a child breathes the poisoned air of nationalism, education, and world-mindedness can produce only precarious results. As we have pointed out, it is frequently the family that infects the child with extreme nationalism. The school should therefore use the means described earlier to combat family attitudes that favor jingoism or, as it's defined, nationalism. And we shall see presently recognized in nationalism the major obstacle to the development of world-mindedness. We are at the beginning of a long process of breaking down the walls of national sovereignty. UNESCO must be the pioneer."
Plan to inventory and control all land, all water, all minerals, all plants and animals, all construction, all food, all energy, all means of production, all education, all information, and all human beings in the world.
Welcome back to New World Out of Order. Hey, this episode is going to be talking about something that I hope you're already aware of, but if not, hopefully we're going to be able to teach you a little bit about it tonight. It is called UN Agenda 21. It stands for United Nations Agenda for the 21st Century. And I tell you what, before we get into that last podcast, What Will It Take, America? I sat there and I quoted, many elected officials, presidents, congressmen, business leaders, for the past 125 years, to give everybody an idea that we've been warned. We've had people out here telling us what's been going on, that there is a monstrous conspiracy out here that's going on. And, one of the most famous speeches to me is, the 1963 John F. Kennedy speech. And he comes out, he pretty well outlines it. Now there again, most people just, they hear the noise, but they don't listen to the words. And if you actually listen to that speech, you will hear it plain as day. So anyway, been a lot of warnings going on, but what I did say is I promised that I would give my recommendations for what I think people can do in this country. There's, you know, a lot of people that put out, you know, podcasts such as mine or internet radio stations, programs that they bring this type of information to the forefront, but a lot of them don't offer suggestions on what people can do. And you can really get lost out here. And it's like, you just keep turning the channel. It's like, okay, I hear it. What can we do? How do we stop this? So, there's no definitive answer for that. I'm convinced of that. The best thing that I believe everybody will agree on that we can do is unite and communicate as a community. You must get together and talk with your family, your friends, your neighbors, your neighborhood, and your town. That is so important. This is where it starts. Now, you get a little small group of 30, 40 people up, and that doesn't take anything. Trust me. You can get started with just a couple of friends and neighbors. And here's how it really works is that, you know, most people are reluctant to talk about these type of subjects for fear of being ridiculed, for fear of being accused of being, you know, a conspiracy theorist, you know. And of course, that stigma behind the conspiracy theorist phrase was intentionally built up by the mainstream media, you know, to discourage you from talking about things like this for fear of being labeled a conspiracy theorist. But you're an intelligent person. You have a responsibility to question any and everything that goes on within our government. That is not just some people's responsibility. That's every single American's responsibility. And what you're going to find out is not, because I do this on a daily basis, I make it a point whenever I'm in public, I talk to people, strangers, and I enjoy talking to strangers anyway, just getting to know them. And I just enjoy talking to them, but I always will kind of steer the conversation somewhat towards, you know, this area. And it doesn't take that much, because usually if you're talking to a stranger and you're in public, you know, one of the first things that you talk about besides the weather perhaps is, you know, something that's going on in your city or town or state or country that, you know, you don't like or you know, so it doesn't really take a whole lot to get into that. Now, what you're going to find is, and I can safely say that 95% of the people that I talk to already know to one degree or another about these subjects. Not all the subjects, but they know something. Everybody knows something's going on, something's not right, something's wrong. Most people, and I say probably 95% or greater, know a little bit about something, you know, about, you know, the total, you know, corruption and reallocation of wealth that was with the bailouts and, or perhaps the UN Agenda 21 or perhaps 9/11 or whatever. Everybody knows a little bit about something and everybody's curious. And more important than that, what I also notice is everybody really, really wants to talk about it. Because once you get them started, a lot of times it's very hard to get them to stop. And I include myself on that. But so it's not hard to get these groups started whatsoever. Just don't be afraid to talk, because everybody that you bring up one of these subjects to is going to know a little bit of something about something, and they're going to want to talk. They really are. And then they're going to say, oh, I've got a friend who we talk about this kind of stuff, you know. And before you know it, you'll have 30, 40 people, and you're looking for, you know, you're going from someone's dining room table where you're discussing this to maybe you're going over to McDonald's or Burger King or something like that in meeting to where now you're looking for a full-fledged conference room in order to have your discussions with these kind of people. So it won't take long. That's one of the best things that I can recommend. Now, there are many groups on the internet that have organized groups. I encourage you to look at those as well. Be very careful. A lot of these groups have been formed by the corporatocracy. And give you an example here, like right before the election, you know, we were bombarded with a lot of stuff on email, Twitter, Facebook, from Americans for Prosperity. And man, they're all good. Of course, everything is sounding very good, and they're going to appeal to everything that you desire within your government and everything that you desire out of the results of the election. And they do that on purpose, of course. Now, this group is funded mainly by the Koch brothers, David and Charles Koch. Now, that's definitely, some of the ringleaders of the corporatocracy. They are not looking out for the benefit of this country. And there again, I'm not trying to single out the Koch brothers by any means, because they are definitely not the only ones. There's many, many out there. But be careful about that. Look into who funds these groups. Talk to other people about them. And really kind of find out before you get involved. Now, there's a few out there that I support either financially, or I contribute to their websites occasionally with articles or comments, or will participate in some of their radio programs. But the one that I really chose to get active with is the We the People organization, wethepeople.org, and specifically their Constitution lobby. And it's exactly what it is. It's a lobby for our Constitution. And of course, we shouldn't have to have this, but we do. Every major industry in the country, and you'll probably be surprised to find out that most, there are many, many foreign governments that have lobbies that are in this country and are lobbying our congressmen, for preferential treatment, preferential, legislation that's going to benefit them in one way or another, just as the large industries do. But there's no a lobby for a Constitution. Shouldn't have to be one, because every elected official is there to preserve the Constitution, uphold the Constitution, and protect it against enemies both foreign and domestic. But of course, we all know, I'm sure most of those guys in Washington, they probably never even read the Constitution, honestly. So anyway, we as individual Americans, it's our responsibility to protect that document, which is the ultimate law of this land. Now, it has been shredded. It has been superseded in some areas, in a lot of areas, and that most people aren't even aware of. Patriot Act did a lot of damage to it. I firmly believe in that organization. The guy that runs it, Robert Schulz, he's been doing this for 30 years. He doesn't get a dime out of this. WePeople.org is a membership organization. You do pay a membership. He has done a wonderful, wonderful job. He really is. So anyway, that's just an example of what you can do. But absolutely the most important thing to do is talk to people, talk to your community. I was talking to, I live in a suburb community of Savannah, Georgia, and I went to our local, community town paper the other day, which is an extension of the Savannah Morning News in Savannah, and started talking to a reporter about a certain subject. And at first he seemed shocked. And then the more I talked about it, he spoke up just like everyone else does. And, oh yeah, I know about this. And, that, and it's just amazing. There again, a lot of them, they don't print it. And, I'm still working on that in my area. And if you get to that point in your area, you will have to work on that with media. I don't want to spend too much time on that, but that's what I recommend. It's what you can do. Learn the Constitution for one thing. Learn, what you're doing. Learn in order to fix a problem, you first must realize that there is a problem. So you must recognize the problem. And the next thing is you have to understand the nature of the problem, before you can even attempt to start to correct the problem. So what you have to do is you have to educate yourself. And of course, you're doing that. One of the things that you're doing right now is that, by listening to this podcast. But, this podcast is only meant to intrigue you. It is not really meant to educate you to any great degree whatsoever. Especially like on the subject tonight, it's just too large. You must go out there and read about this. And, And, you know, but I also encourage you to don't listen to anyone like myself as far as deciding your stance, your belief in any of these issues. You want to be intrigued by what I say, because I promise you, I will never, ever intentionally lie to you or mislead you on anything. And I research things to a great degree. Do I make mistakes sometimes? Obviously, I do. Anybody does. But so don't, you know, be intrigued by what I say, but don't believe what I say. You must go out there and learn this. You've got to educate yourself on what's going on, and not a hard thing to do whatsoever. Please, you know, move forward with that. Hope that helps out. And any questions with that, please contact me. NWO3.com. My email is on there. It's actually nworld03@gmail.com. That's nworld03@gmail.com. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that I can, perhaps. But anyway, let's move on to Agenda 21. Okay, Agenda 21 is, what is it? If you haven't heard about it, it's going to sound wonderful on the outset. It is a primarily, it's being pushed as a environmental conservation movement, extreme forethought, and preeminent planning for, you know, sustainable growth and sustainable environment for the future of our planet. And I mean, who is not for that? We're all for that. And we all realize that, you know, at this time we're smart enough as a race to know that we need to start taking care of our resources and our planet and our atmosphere and all of that. But you need to find out the details on this, because one thing, anything that's coming out of the UN is not going to be, you know, to your ultimate benefit, to our ultimate benefit. And I'll provide some reasoning that I say that here in just a few minutes here. What is the UN Agenda 21? It's a global contract that binds governments around the world to the UN plan for changing the way that we live, the way that we eat, the way that we learn, the way that we communicate, the way that we, our transportation, our electricity, any type of resource. Every facet of your life is in this plan. It's touched by this plan in some one way or the other. And if it's implemented, you know, it would manage and monitor all the lands and all the people of the world to a degree that you could not really fathom right now. And it is about, there's several ultimate goals here. Of course, the one world government is the goal, and they have to be able to control a population, you know, control the people. And the way that you control anything is, there's several different techniques to actually implement to control people or societies or whatever. But in order to first do this, you must understand who and where they are. So you kind of have to take an inventory. And I take that, actually, that term from a girl. Her name is Rosa Corey, and it's K-O-I-R-E. And Rosa has, I actually just became aware of Rosa just a couple of weeks ago. She was on an internet radio show, and I called in and talked to her for a little while. I've been aware of Agenda 21 for a good while, but she has a great way of talking about it to where everybody can understand. And I know that I wish I had that ability, but, you know, Rosa Corey, she wrote a book recently, and it is called Behind the Green Mask, you know, the UN Agenda 21. After a conversation, I purchased the book and read it, and it's very good. It gives a little bit of her background. It gives a foundation for what the Agenda 21 is, and it gives real world experiences that she's overcome, because she's an extreme activist against Agenda 21, mainly in her community in the Santa Rosa area of California. But, you know, she travels all over the country talking about this. And it sounds like she does go to a lot of meetings, even outside of her area, to help, you know, individual communities try to stop this effort. So Rosa Corey, her book is Behind the Green Mask, the UN Agenda 21. So it's, like I say, it's very good reading. I recommend you go out there and take it out. Now, where did this this Agenda 21 come from? I need to give you some background first. It originally came out of the Club of Rome, and obviously it's in Rome, Italy. And this organization, this group, which is like a, it's guys, is a think tank that they contract to the United Nations primarily, but also other groups. And they discuss and recommend policy for primarily environmental issues, not solely environmental issues, but primarily environmental issues. And they were formed in 1968. And actually the people, let's see, one of the original guys was Alexander King, I believe, but they were brought together by David Rockefeller, and the group met at his estate in Bellagio, Italy in 1968, and they laid down the formation for the Club of Rome and what their purpose was and how they were going to move forward. So, and of course, if you know David Rockefeller, you know, I'm not going to go into the detail on him, but you understand that he is, you know, he's the grand poopah. He's the grand, you know, leader of the One World effort in the United States. Doesn't really get any higher than him from an individual. So it was formed in 1968, in Italy. And one of the first things they did talk about was creating, how to create a new enemy. Let me just kind of read you, switch over here real quick to some quotes here. The Club of Rome describes itself as a group of world citizens sharing a common concern for the future of humanity. That just sounds absolutely wonderful, and I'll sign up if that's what they really do, but it's not what they really do. It consists of current and former heads of state, UN bureaucrats, high-level politicians, and government officials, government diplomats, scientists, economists, business leaders from around the world. So goodness, sounds good. You know, they're out to do a good thing for humanity and for the country and for the world, rather. Now, in 1991, they published a book called The First Global Revolution. And I encourage you to go get this book. You can actually get a free PDF copy on the internet. I encourage you to go get this. Published in 1991. It came on the heels of a 1972, study, the report, from a study issue, that was issued in 1972, called the limit of growth, or the limit to growth, forget which one it is, but this was sponsored by the Club of Rome, and it was actually conducted by some MIT, about three MIT scientists, I believe. One was spearheaded by a man and wife. And what they use what was called a World 3 modeling technique for doing the simulation here of future growth on the planet and sustainability of resources. So anyway, you can go back and look in all that if you want to. And it's curious reading for a good solid foundation on an understanding of what we're talking about here. But in this book, The First Global Revolution, like I said, published in 1991, it said that divided nations require common enemies to unite them, either real ones or else ones that are invented for the purpose. So, you know, that should kind of raise a flag for somebody to say, hey, wait a minute, what the heck are they talking about here? That sounds pretty sinister to me. And it is. And it really is. So if we go a little bit further and jump into the book, there again, encourage you to go check this out and get a free PDF copy. Page 75 of this book really sums it up. And now this is what was originally discussed with the formation of the Club of Rome in 1968. I'm going to read you this short little paragraph here. In searching for a common enemy against whom we can unite, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. In their totality and their interactions, these phenomena do constitute a common threat which must be confronted by everyone together. So here it is in a nutshell. They formed this group with the primary mission of creating pseudo enemies of the world so that they can unite the world into a with a common cause, a common solution to these made up problems, and so that the world will get behind and join their efforts and, you know, think they're all wonderful people. And let me go back and kind of read this again. It says, we came up with the idea that pollution, and remember back, this was 1991, these ideas were actually put on paper in 1968. Remember back, goodness, 70s and 80s, that's when the pollution really started getting a lot of attention. You started reading about it everywhere and started coming up with all the pollution legislation and all this kind of stuff, and right, and everybody had to get on board and curb pollution. Now, there again, don't take me wrong here. Everybody that's listening to this probably understands it's a good idea to minimize any and all pollution that we create. That's just obvious, right? But there again, here you hear that they decided to come up with a fictitious enemy, right, in order to unite, you know, the world, in not only unite the world, but uniting the world behind the United Nations, okay? And so the first thing was the pollution. Of course, pollution is still a big, big thing right now, and it always will be, according to these people. Now, the next one was the threat of global warming. Now, that is the newest one that they've been actually working on for the last, 15, 20 years, perhaps, is the threat of global warming. And there again, that's their words, is the threat of global warming. And of course, anyone who's looked into any detail into global warming understands that man-made global warming is not a reality. And I know I'm going to ruffle some feathers right there, but here, as far as global warming or any sort of man-made contribution to the atmosphere, which could lead to global warming, I'm all in favor. We're all in favor of reducing that and understanding the atmosphere and what we can do to help protect it and save it. I'm all for that. But you must understand this enemy, this was contrived. And there's been many, many scientists that have come forward and either on their own account or have been, you know, really busted for falsifying the data. Now, if you go back and look at the data, there is there's a cycle of warming and cooling in the Earth, and it just happens all the time. The Earth hasn't been warming since 1998. It's been cooling ever since then. So anyway, I'm not going to get into that to detail because I know I don't want to lose anybody. Please believe me. We need to do everything that we can to stop global warming outside of, these ridiculous CO2 efforts. Okay. You know, carbon dioxide is a mainstay and essential for life on this planet. And to actually go out here and start talking about, purchasing, requiring people to purchase and pay penalties on carbon credits. If you really think about this, it's ridiculous. It doesn't do anything to curb man's contribution to global warming. It causes a redistribution of wealth. It sure does that. But anyway, I don't want to lose people on this, but I'll be glad to talk with anyone if you're would like to. Like I say, you can email me and you know, come join the podcast if you'd like to. I'd love to have you on here. You know, we're not going to do this and get, and then, you know, I'm not going to have anyone on here that's going to get irate and irrational. That's just not what we're about. I'd love to have anyone on here and let's, you know, talk rationally. I'm always anxious to hear anyone's opinion on whatever. But I've looked into the global warming issue pretty deeply. And anyway, that's definitely the way that I feel right now. So anyway, now the next item in that list was, you know, I'm going to go back and just read it again. We came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like. Okay. The next item is water shortages. Now, if you've been paying attention, you probably remember reading or hearing on the news about, you know, water rights. There's discussions, there's arguments over water rights, whether it's, you know, a common aquifer that's being shared with cities, or whether it's a common above ground river or whatever, or if it's actually some company or some people purchasing or selling, the water rights in your town, perhaps. So, This is just now starting off. You know, water is the next oil. I'm sure you've probably heard that. And it really is. And we need to really stop this, because this is a you know, essential for life. And any resource like this that is essential for life should not be made available for profit. You know, this should be regulated and actually supplied by the community. And no one should own this, and it should definitely be protected. And I know that's some general statements for some huge, big subjects, but it just shouldn't happen. But keep your eye on this. This is the next global warming, and that is water. Water is coming up, and it was stated here back in 1991. And like I say, these thoughts were put down on paper in 1968. So, and the other one is famine. And there again, with the famine, you know, we're just now starting to kind of get into that. And there again, I'm going to touch on some things which you might not be aware of, but if you're not, just, like I say, just go out there and look about and read up on it. With the famine, like I said, we're just starting to get into that. You're going to see it increasing, every year now. And this is as a result of, this is manipulation by man. It, as a result of our technology that allows us to control weather to one degree or another. And if you're not aware of this, this is an old technology that we have had. And I say we, and that's not just Americans, but you know, Russians, the Chinese, some European countries have had this ability for many, many. I'm talking 50 years. You know, we used a substantial amount of cloud seeding back in Vietnam, and you know, that's cloud seeding with different substances, and they're all can be described as an aerosol that will help participate the collection of you know, water in the air, and then of course result in rain. But anyway, this has been going on for a long time. The most advanced that we are aware of, and I can tell you there are more advanced things than what I know of and than what anybody knows of, is one of the most advanced is HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project. And that's HAARP. This is located, the HARP antenna farm right now is located in, the primary one is located in Gakona, Alaska. It is a large antenna farm, and they have the ability to beam, it's approximately 3.5 billion watts into the atmosphere. And to give you just a short breakdown, I hope you're all aware of this by now, because this is, I mean, they have a website and everything. This is like not hidden whatsoever. They've been online since 1999. And, but the, you know, the, in a nutshell, the basis of how this works is they beam this huge amount of directed energy into the atmosphere, to the ionosphere, which is the last layer of our atmosphere, and it heats up the ionosphere, and it actually causes it to bubble out. Well, when it bubbles out, whatever is in our atmosphere comes in to fill that void. And of course, one of the main things is the jet stream can be relocated and actually can be positionally controlled by this. Now, that's just the very, very basic way that they can do this, but also they can create a what's called a plasma mirror up in the ionosphere. They have other stations on the ground throughout the world, actually, that are, some are called heating stations, some are called steering stations, and they are radar stations. They can actually control the attitude of that plasma mirror to where they can adjust it to where that beam is actually reflected off of that mirror, back to other points in the United States. Now, this is actually run by the department. It's actually run by the Air Force. Say the Air Force or the Navy. I think it's the Air Force. But it's Department of Defense that has this. Been online, like I say, since 1999. Still classified as experimentation. Please, by all means, if you're not aware of this, go look into it, because this is something that most people think, oh my God, you're just totally out there and crazy and all that kind of stuff. It sounds like it, sure, but that technology is there and has been for a long time. The basis of the technology was actually founded by Nikola Tesla back at the first part of 1900s. But the specific patent is out there, and you can look at the patent. They can create extreme droughts. I have some unproven documents, and I'll just mention it to that extent and no more, that the extreme drought in Texas the past few years was induced. And, it was contrived by man. It was not just an act of nature. And it's amazing also what you'll learn about HAARP in that their abilities to steer storms. And it's a very interesting subject that I think that you'd be very interested in reading if you're not aware of it. So go check that out. So anyway, let's get back onto this Agenda 21. So just to recap, they came up with these enemies back in 1968. Officially published this to the public in 1991, and they didn't hold anything back. They told you when they're searching for a common enemy. Now, in this document that they published, they're searching for a common enemy. In the other statements they have made, they said that they actually needed to create this enemy. Okay? So they're creating this enemy against that will allow everybody to unite. Okay. They've already gone through the pollution. They've already instilled that into our culture. The threat of global warming is pretty well instilled into our culture. The whole world has united around this effort in one way or another. It's a very, very common topic. Everyone in the planet knows about global warming. And of course, and now that you understand that this was a made-up threat. Okay. Now, let's get back to Agenda 21. Well, let's kind of creep into it a little bit more here. United Nations was, it came into being, and it was in 1944 or 1945. I think it was 1945 is when it actually was approved. But, it's like I've told you, there's a lot of, if it's coming from the United Nations, I'm fully convinced already. You might not be yet, but it is not for in our best interest whatsoever. The United Nations is the one world government. And, of course, people questioned that back in 1945 because they tried to do this earlier with the earlier League of Nations that was created right after World War One, and it became pretty apparent that they were trying to instill a world government there. And, of course, the United States never signed on to that, but the United Nations, they did. Now, the United States Senate, they ratified the treaty establishing the UN back in 1945 because we were told, the Senate was told by our Secretary of State, who was at the time, was a guy named Edward Stettinius, I believe, Stettinius. Now, he was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Council on Foreign Relations, huge, huge think tank that has a primary mission is to eradicate the sovereignty of the United States. Well, he, Edward Stettinius, Secretary of State, told our senators that the UN was not a world government and would have no impact on our national sovereignty. Okay, well, now the next year, 1946, the Assistant U.S. Secretary of State, who was named William Benton, he told the UNESCO meeting, which is the UN Environmental Group, and I'm going to quote you this here. This was 1 year after the formation of the United Nations. Assistant U.S. Secretary of State said, "As long as a child breathes the poison air of nationalism, education in world education in world-mindedness can produce only precarious results. As we have pointed out, it is frequently the family that infects the child with extremism, nationalism. The school should therefore use the means described earlier to combat family attitudes that favor nationalism. We shall presently recognize in nationalism the major obstacle to development of world-mindedness. We are at the beginning of a long process of breaking down the walls of national sovereignty. UNESCO must be the pioneer." So he's telling you right there the same thing that Edward House, chief of staff to Wilson back in 1919, about the one world government, that it's going to happen. Now, at the same time, the UNESCO advisor, a guy named Bertrand Russell, wrote in an article for the UNESCO Journal saying that every government that has been in control of education for a generation will be able to control its subjects securely without the need of armies or policemen. Now, you see where they're at, see where their mind is at, see where they're going here. It said every government that has been in control of education for a generation will be able to control its subjects securely without the need of armies or policemen. So that's just a little bit of background on the United Nations. And there again, that's just there again, please go out there and read up on it. Because, their intent has always been global government, whereby the public education system has been corrupted to train the citizens rather than educate them in arts and sciences and critical thinking. They've been there to train them. The intent has been to create a one-world government where the state is sovereign over its subjects and where freedom and the rights are granted at the pleasure of the state, not as inalienable rights, not God-given rights. Bill Clinton, his mentor, and I know I've mentioned this guy before, his mentor at Georgetown University, he was a former Harvard professor, a guy named Carol Quigley. He studied the powerful elite, for 20 years, and he was actually deemed the official Council on Foreign Relations historian. And he wrote in a book in 1966 called Tragedy and Hope. And it is I haven't read the whole thing. It's about a 1,300 page read, but he wrote in there, he said that the global elite's aim is nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. The system was to be controlled in a feudalistic fashion by the central banks of the world acting in concert, by secret agreements arrived at in private meetings and conferences. Well, there again, there's many, many other quotes that you should read and would probably enjoy understanding that came from this book, Tragedy and Hope. Now, there again, don't be, don't think that Mr. Quigley is a great whistleblower or anything. He's not, because of the portions that I've read of this book, Mr. Quigley, he is reporting on this as he was contracted to do, but he is not in difference with it. He is in agreement with this. So don't think that he's a great whistleblower or anything like that. He's just telling us the way it was. Been many other people that have done that as well. Now, there's another thing that came out years ago, and that was the Iron Mountain Report, or the report from Iron Mountain. And it was initiated by Robert F. Kennedy, or John F. Kennedy, to study the effects of total peace on Earth, and if it was actually achievable, and, you know, could we actually do away with all wars and all kind of stuff. And it was the purpose of the report was to define a mechanism to switch from, you know, the threat of war as a means to control society to something that would work in a peaceful environment. And, you know, the Foreign Affairs, which is the publication for the Council of Foreign Relations, they began to promote environmental Holocaust back in 1970, and the major foundations began to, you know, fund environmental activism back in the early 70s. And there again, that's as a result of the Club of Rome devising that whole plan for the environmental, you know, Holocaust, as they say. So I don't know. It's truly amazing. So let's get back. I want to get back. I know I'm kind of. I'm getting into a little bit more of a foundation building here on the United Nations than I really intended, but it's just, you know, you just really need to understand this kind of stuff in order to really understand the problem. So to get back to, you know, Agenda 21, what it is, it's going to be, it's already happening right now, and it happens at the local implementation organization that is doing this is called ICLEI. It's the International Consortium of Local Environmental Initiatives, and ICLEI, and the people just call it ICLEI. ICLEI was formed, you know, right after the announcement of Agenda 21. And I apologize, I haven't even told you that yet. Agenda 21 came out in 1992. At the UN Environmental Conference. It was in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And this is where it was publicly introduced. It is about a 350-page document. It's about 40 chapters that was actually introduced. And it was immediately signed on to by, it's like 178 countries during that conference. It is not a treaty. It is a... it is just an agreement, so it's voluntary, and voluntary to a certain extent. Because you know how that kind of stuff works. And what it does is it goes in and says, hey, we need to start regulating our resources. We need to start, start looking out for how people are living, how much resources they're consuming. We need to get smart as far as where people live. You know, people just can't live just, you know, scattered out anywhere they want to. They need to live in concentrated areas so that we can provide them with, you know, the electricity, the water, and things like that in an efficient manner. And we need to, we need to protect the wildlife and, reforestation of a lot of the country. And actually, when I say a lot of the country, they're talking about reforesting 2/3 of the United States and, moving people into high density mixed use zoned areas. And that's the new term I'm sure you've probably heard. And if you go in and look in your perhaps the meeting notes from your county council or city council, you will find in there, most likely in just about every one of them, the terms of sustainable growth, sustainable environment, sustainable living, high density mixed use zoning allocations. And this is where it comes from. These are all the terms that come from the Agenda 21. And you'll never see or hear Agenda 21 on your local level by any means. You can go to un.org and you can actually go and read the Agenda 21 document. but you'll never hear the Agenda 21 at your local level. You will hear ICLEI. ICLEI signed up, I think it was about 70,000 cities and or counties worldwide. It was in 2009, they had peaked in the United States with, I believe, a little over 650 signees, and that being cities and or counties. But they have dropped since then. Thank goodness they have dropped since then. There has been a lot of cities that have come up and realized what's going on here. Now, you know, just to give you just a brief idea of how they're going to be doing this, they're going to be monitoring. They have to, that one, for one thing, they have to take an inventory of the people, and that's, and they do that by being able to monitor you on a continual basis everywhere. And they do this right now through, you know, your email, and whether you, you know it or even like to admit it, every bit of your email, every bit of your cell phone conversations are monitored 100%. And, that's been acknowledged by, you know, NSA whistleblowers and even AT&T whistleblowers when they actually discovered their room 114 and their San Francisco facility out there. They had a little hidden room where they had special servers that were just there to collect this data for the NSA. And then also the NSA is building that super duper data collection center in I believe it's Bluffton, Idaho, Blufftown, Idaho. It's a $2 billion unit. It should be coming online in 2013 or 2014. Anyway, that's the monitoring that they're doing, you know, right now. And if you read the other day about, you know, for smart appliances, and if you saw where Verizon was coming out with this DVR that they will be, you know, offering their customers, but what they didn't know, that it, but it was discovered and leaked, was that this DVR had a microphone and camera built into it to where it would actually watch you. Like I say, not something they were promoting or intended for anyone to even find out about, I guess. But and if you're looking into smart meters, I know you've heard this for many years, and if you're in a larger city, you might even already have a smart meter. If you don't, I highly encourage you to refuse that smart meter. You still have a right and an option to refuse a smart meter. Once you have already elected to accept the smart meter, your ability to get rid of that is much more difficult, much more difficult. The smart meters are the tap into your house for two-way communications. They're being sold, you know, they're selling us on the idea that they're putting the smart meter in place so that they can, you know, monitor your electricity usage, and so where they can, you know, customize and better, you know, better control their generation capabilities. But, you know, and they're also telling you, too, that in peak times when they have it to avoid brownouts and blackouts, that if they get near that point of having a brownout, that they will curtail or could curtail your electricity usage, such as, you know, peak summertime hours when everyone's got their air conditioning on. They can actually cut everybody back a little bit, and that's what they've been telling everybody for years, and they will do that. That's part of it. But they also have these smart meters have the ability to transmit a huge amount of data back to a facility, wherever it, you know, tends to go. And that network, that grid of data collection on the grid, is literally worldwide. It's literally worldwide if you actually, you know, read about it. But now they're coming up with these new standards for smart appliances, and the smart appliances will, you know, they're saying that, you know, hey, they're going to be able to communicate with the smart meter, so they get more detailed information on how the electricity is being used and that kind of stuff. And it all sounds wonderful and good. Well, the smart appliances will be actually monitoring you. And yeah, I know this sounds all far-fetched and creepy, and it's like just ridiculous. But there again, just go back and read about, it just came out like a week or two ago, about the Verizon DVR. It's the new smart appliance, and I think it's the SO2 standard. It's probably not right. I can't remember exactly what the standard is. It conforms to that standard, and it has a hidden built-in microphone and video camera. So, and it will be transmitting across the smart meter communications network that is in the power distribution lines. So anyway, that's part of it. So they're monitoring the people. What they will be doing is they will be eradicating the ability for and the right for citizens to own private property. They don't think it's a need for citizens to own private property. They think that they are not smart enough to handle private property and the resources that are on that property. So they're going to be herding everybody into these large mega region areas. And I think right now there's 11 of them planned. You can go out and look at the 2050, which is a milestone for Agenda 21. It's 2050 for having a lot of this stuff done. I'll put these on the website as well. Some pictures of these mega regions, the Northeast is one around New York City, the Great Lakes area around Atlanta is one. There's one in Arizona, and there's Southern California. Anyways, there's 11 of those, and that's where you'll be. That's where you'll be living. You'll be living in high density buildings. That, you know, no more private property, no more private land. And they're already starting this. Have been starting it for a long time now. In that they're one of the things they'll be building buffer zones around wildlife areas and lakes and rivers and things like that. And there was a guy, Curtis Didier, who was an ex-football player. He's in Washington State. He's a farmer now. And he was approached last year by his local Department of EPA saying that they are going to come in and acquire a buffer zone around all of his ponds on his farms and in the buffer zones around the creeks on his ponds, a 500-foot buffer zone in all directions, so that they will prevent the pesticides and fertilizers from going into that water source and then, you know, working its way into the underground aquifers and or the rivers. Okay. Well, you know, they had a private study done on the, the infiltration of these pesticides and, fertilizers on the local rivers and any other body of water that there were these farms touched. And not just this guy's farm. This was the farms in this particular county. And there is no runoff. There is no contribution of pesticides or anything to these waterways because of these farms. None. So they're fixing a problem that doesn't exist. And this is all about it. And what they're doing by acquiring those 500-foot perimeters or buffer zones, what that equates to is actually 60% of farmland in the state of Washington and most likely in other states as well. But 60%, now you can see where they're already grabbing a hold of this, right? They'll grab a hold of this farmland and they're going to be pushing farmers off their land. They'll make it so where they cannot farm because of the regulations that's being imposed, by this. So, okay. Anyway, there is so much more that goes into this. I'm getting kind of long now. I'm already about 50 some odd minutes and I'm getting kind of long here and I don't want to lose you. Go out and look at it. I'm going to put some of these websites that I recommend on my website, which is, NWO3.com. And I also put some, there's been many, many success stories of communities, whether it be on the state level or on the county level or city level, of rejecting this. Even ones that had already pretty much signed on with the ICLEI movement. And there again, when you sign on with ICLEI, now that portion is not voluntary. When you get on with ICLEI, because you actually have to pay, there was one community here which was paying $20,000 a year in order to be involved with ICLEI and get the suggestions that they have for sustainable development. And once you sign on with them, you must adhere to this. You must do what they say. Otherwise, you lose your ICLEI certification and all that kind of stuff, which everybody's, thinks they need to have to be a good, citizen of the state or the community or whatever, but it's all a false pretense here. So I'll put some of these out here. There's been many, many of them Alabama recently passed, it was a law, SB 477. This was on the state level where they totally rejected Agenda 21. Agenda 21 is not allowed to participate in the state of Florida and that, and also ICLEI. So that's, you know, very good. People are becoming enlightened, and most of the ones that I've read, it's the citizens that have brought this information forward to the councilmen or to the politicians and made them aware of it. So it wasn't the politicians that discovered this information. It was people like you and me who discover this. We bring it to the attention of the elected officials. And there again, you know, sometimes it might take some convincing because it does seem outlandish, but there's so much irrefutable evidence out here that we can show them that it will actually bring them up to speed. And that's what's happened in many, many communities. So, okay, Agenda 21, it's in a nutshell, it's designed to essentially take away all of our rights, take away all national sovereignties. You know, this is to create, this is part of the plan to control the society under the one world government. This isn't the creation of the one world government. This is just the control and monitoring of the society within the one world government. And, you know, it's going to affect every portion of your life. Every portion of your life. Now, one thing, when I was talking about the education earlier, and the guy was saying, "Hey, give us the control of your education for one generation, and you know we've pretty much got your kids, you know, and we don't need armies anymore to control you guys," and that's very important. And my next podcast will probably be on this, and I hate to even state that now because I've done that before, and I've had different podcasts come up. But anyway, I will be doing an upcoming podcast on the education system in America. And if you're not aware of what's going on there, it is amazing what's been happening for years. There again, if you go back to the four methods of controlling a people, whether it be individuals or society, and this is by the elites, I guess, the bankers that are really kind of behind all this stuff. You know, one of the main things is controlling the education, controlling what people learn. They control what people hear through the press. They control what they learn. And they have been controlling our education for a couple of generations now, if not even longer. So when you're kind of asking yourself about what's all this crap, and what's going on with society and all this kind of stuff, well, this might provide you with a little bit of understanding of what's going on and the need for us to take it back. And if you've heard of when Ron Paul was running for office, and every time he's run for presidency, he's always said, eradicate, get rid of the IRS, the Fed, and the Department of Energy and the Department of Education. Department of Education is where most people just gasp and say, oh my God, this guy is just crazy. They created the Department of Education, I believe it was 1972. You know, the Department of Education until then was controlled at the state level, which it still needs to be, if not at the local level. And anyway, next podcast I'll be doing will be on the state of education in our country. And to give you a head start, there is a fantastic book, which I'm going to be referencing a lot in that podcast. It is called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of Education in America, I believe is the name of it. And it's by a lady named Charlotte Eiserbeit. And Charlotte is not just an author. She was she's a whistleblower. You know, she was like a senior policy advisor for the Office of Education, Research, and Improvement under Department of Education under the Reagan administration. Been in education all of her life. Well, she's a whistleblower as a result of that term in the Department of Education, learning what was going on and what was the real motive of the Department of Education. So very, very enlightening book, Charlotte Eiserbeit. And like I said, that book is called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. So, all right, guys, sorry for going so long. I hope you was able to hang in there with me and check out Agenda 21. Check out Rosa Corey, K-O-I-R-E. Her website is democratsagainstagenda21.com. That's a long one. It's Democrats Against Agenda21.com. Please don't allow the Democrat to persuade you here one way or another to read this or not. You know, try to be non-political on these issues, because it really goes way past politics. You know, it doesn't matter, Republican, Democrat, whatever. So just, you know, go check that website, check out some of her videos. She explains it very well, much better than I do, and you'll get a good understanding about it. But read, learn, educate yourself, talk to your friends about it, and let's get this crap turned around. Thanks, guys.